All right, let's go to Coors Field and bring in Extra Bags with two G's on Twitter. Andy Baggerly, who covers the San Francisco Giants for the Bay Area News Group, the San Jose Mercury News. Extra Bags, how are you, Andy?
Well, Marty, the sun rose today, and it's actually out, which is a bit of an upset. I think it was supposed to be a dodgy weather today, but it's actually kind of nice, partly cloudy, and looks like it might be a halfway decent night for baseball, believe it or not.
Yeah, I looked at the weather forecast, and I didn't see any rain, which is unusual for a weekend at Coors Field, so good for you. I hope you have a nice warm night out there. You know, obviously Twitter has been going crazy over the last 24 hours with the Madison Bumgarner issue. You wrote a very interesting column today about it, which I want to get to with you. But first of all, can you describe the actual injury that has befallen him and what the effect may be on a left-handed pitcher like that?
Well, the easiest way to describe it is the way he described it himself in a text to Dave Righetti, which is, I'm pretty banged up. And that's basically what he is. I mean, if you've fallen off a dirt bike that's going any rate of speed, and reading between the lines of what people are saying is the Giants feel they're pretty fortunate that he's not more seriously hurt, than he is, in terms of really something that could have been life-threatening or bat or career ending. But this is scary. This is the left shoulder of a left-handed pitcher, and your shoulder is the joint that's got more range of motion and more mobility than any other joint in your body. And there's a whole lot of little structures in there, in the labrum and the rotator cuffs, that keep that joint stable. Because once you have instability, if you've separated your shoulder, it can pop out more easily. You hear of guys getting their shoulder capsule tightened, to make it more stable. Now, the thing about this injury is it's the AC joint. It's at the top of the shoulder, more where the collarbone attaches.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not in the shoulder capsule, but any instability in that shoulder can lead to more problems in other areas. And especially when you're a pitcher and you throw the way he does from his arm angle, and you just don't know how it's going to bounce back, how it's going to be affected. And they don't know whether it's grade one or grade two, which means they can't tell, just how much is torn in there right now. So, could it have been worse? Absolutely. But I don't think we're going to find out just where this thing stands until maybe the middle of next week.
Very good. Andy Baggerly with us. A very good description. As I said, I read Wikipedia, and you summarized it very well. It's kind of the junction of the collarbone, the shoulder, the scapula. And the key thing that I read in Wikipedia about the AC joint is the possibility of more pain and instability even after healing. And then you may have surgery after that. But for a left-handed pitcher, it's very significant. So you're right. Any details on where he was? Was he with anyone else or anything else? I know it's been kind of mum, other than just being thankful that he's not hurt worse.
Well, we don't really have much details on that. If he was with any teammates, they're not saying. Bruce Bochy said he wasn't with any other teammates. I don't know if he was on Todd Helton's ranch. I don't know if he was out with friends or... Yeah. Or riding solo, he drove himself back, which leads me to believe that he wasn't with other teammates, or they would have, driven for him. But wherever he was, it's almost details that are more salacious than they are really mean anything at this point in terms of his outlook. It's more just intellectual or curiosity of how this thing happened than anything else. But just making one more point with the medicals of this, and again, I am not. I am not an osteopath by any means, but the one thing that you hear a lot when you look into this is hypermobility, and if there is a stretching of some of those ligaments, it can lead to hypermobility in that shoulder. And we've seen it with Matt Cain. He's got more range of motion and more mobility in his elbow now than when he was pitching with bone chips, and it's taken him 2 years, and he still might not have figured it out. So when you've got to repeat your mechanics and trust your mechanics and try to do the same thing every time. It's really hard if you have hypermobility in that shoulder. So, we can speculate all we want, but suffice it to say that this is a really troubling injury. And even if they get him back in 2 months, there's no guarantee that we're going to see the same Madison Bumgarner again. We're just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, boy, amazing how life turns on a day, on a dime, as they say. So very good description, Andy. I appreciate it. Last night, Hunter Pence lost one in the lights, and it looked like they were going to lose him for a while. That left knee looked like it buckled underneath him when he slid. Then he was jumping around, stretching it, and, you know, him, you know, he is going to play through a cyclone if he had to. What do you think about Pence? Have we heard anything about him either the post-game or for today?
Well, after the game yesterday, you know, he went and worked out, and then he talked to us, and then he went to go see the trainer. So the fact that the trainer was third on the list kind of tells me that he was being honest when he said he didn't think it was a very big deal. But you never know. You wake up the next day and it can stiffen up. So we'll see if he's in the lineup today. We should get that shortly. If he's unavailable to play, we already know what the ways they're challenged in the outfield. I mean, it would be hard to imagine just where they could even begin to go. I think they'd have to put Belt in left field and play Posey or Gillespie or some combination of people at first base. They'd have to figure something out if Pence is out for any length of time, because they just cannot afford – they couldn't afford for him to be hurt anyway, and they definitely can't afford it now. But the early read, at least from last night, is that he probably got lucky and didn't do anything serious.
Well, that's good. You wrote a very interesting article just a few hours ago and posted on Twitter, and I urge everyone to check it out at Extra Bags with two Gs. Check out Andy's feed. About Bumgarner and the financial situation, because me being a lawyer, right away when I thought of this, I said, gee, what about the contract? Do they prohibit things like this? Dirt bike riding, by the very nature of the sport, you think things fall over. And I was curious your thought about it. I know you wrote a column about it. Not that the Giants are looking to do anything, but it probably does violate the contract.
Well, the short answer is, does it violate the contract? Probably. Are they going to do anything to dock his pay or avoid his contract? You know, almost certainly not. There have been instances where that has happened. The easy one to point out as an example is Ron Gant when he broke his leg on a dirt bike in 1994 with the Braves. But he was going to miss that whole season, and it was his last year before he was a free agent. So when they voided his contract, it was a different set of circumstances than a Bumgarner who, you know, not only has done so much for the organization, but has two, you know, pretty team friendly options here coming up. And, if he does make a full recovery, that's going to be a no brainer to exercise those. So you're not going to avoid the guy's contract over this. And if you do want to stay on good terms with them, you know, about signing him to an extension, then, you know, docking his pay is probably, could they do it? Yeah, but I think that it would be a lot of aggravation for very little gain, unless you really just want to send the guy a message. And I don't think they feel they need to do that because, you know, he's already expressed remorse and he feels terrible. But going forward, you know, this guy's had a different set of rules applied to him. There's no question. From skipping Fan Fest to, making sure Posey catches his every start to all this other stuff. I mean, it's been somewhat inconsistent, but he has sort of operated under a different set of rules, and I think that may change a little bit.
Boy, going to be interesting. What an interesting, not a good twist, but an interesting twist. You never know where these stories are going to go, where that mosaic, where the pieces are going to fit. Andy, let's go to the last question. That is, what about the effect on the team and viewing 17 games and 145 to go? You've had a good look at it. The extent of his injury and the impact and just how the team is looking in general.
Well, I mean, you know, it's devastating if he's out, but it maybe isn't as devastating as you would think. If he's only out for 2 months and he comes back and he's perfectly fine, which that's a huge if. But if that's the case, you know, they can weather this storm because I think that, you know, they like what they've seen from Kane. What it does is it just gives you fewer places to go, fewer places to pivot if things don't turn out well. If Kane needs to be replaced in the rotation, well, you've already got Ty Block in there. Maybe you bring in Beattie before you really wanted to. Can they get through this with the strength of their rotation? Yeah, they probably can, but they're going to have to score more runs too. I mean, they already were challenged in so many ways, and here they are, the first time since 2007 that they've got the worst record in the National League after playing more than a dozen games in a season. We all talk about how they're going to align their rotation to face the Dodgers, but the Rockies are in first place in this division, and the Diamondbacks are showing, hey, they could be pretty good. So, I think that there's no question it's going to be an uphill climb, and there's a lot of things to be concerned about. And quite honestly, if Bumgarner is out, you know, for the whole year or most of the year, then the Giants could sort of look at it like they could look at Posey in 2011 getting knocked out, and they almost have a built-in excuse for why, you know, if they don't make the playoffs, well, that'll be why, and who knows? Maybe that could end up being better for the franchise in the long run.
Boy, immediate changes coming. Gorky's Hernandez, you know, we point to left field. But for me, the top of the order has got to get on base. And that leadoff spot for me right now, Span looks old. He's hitting those ground balls to second or to first repeatedly. I think they've got to do something to make sure the top of the order gets on, because that's the only way they're going to score runs.
Well, I agree. I think that we saw this offense probably at its best in the post-Bonds era in 2012, when they had, you know, Pagan really having a great year, and Melky Cabrera leading the majors in hits and runs scored when he was popped for steroids. And they were 1-2, and they were just dynamic every day. And especially on the road, it seems like they got a run in the first inning every game. And so I definitely agree with, when you don't have a lot of power, you got to get your leadoff guys on, get some traffic on the bases, put the pitcher under some duress and try to move runners. And Bruce Bochy has wanted to keep Eduardo Nunez in that six hole where he can have a little more of a green light to run with the 7-8 guys hitting behind him. But, you know, Bochy does say, if I have to switch it up, I will. And I wonder if he's getting to the point where he's going to have to switch it up and maybe bat Nunez leadoff, because I agree with you. Span is not producing right now. And, you know, I think Chris Marrero is only on this team because the Giants are so thin. And we'll see if Drew Stubbs is up here soon, or just how soon Mac Williamson, Michael Morse can become major league options. I think as soon as those things happen, then you might see some different faces in the crowd, because, you know, we've seen things on this road trip, like Marrero taking a called third strike with the bases loaded in Kansas City. That can't happen. You know, last night, Gorkis is in there just to bunt. And, yeah, he got a really bad break when basically he had to foul off a pitch at his head when it's 2-1. Yeah. But then he looks at the 2-1 fastball, and I don't think we took the bunt sign off. So, you know, if he's not getting it done, then they're going to have to get somebody else, and I'm sure they're having these discussions right now.
Yeah, boy, what an interesting 17 games. What an interesting 6 weeks since spring training started, and 145 more to go. So quite a story ahead. Andy, thanks for taking the time today, as always, and look forward to seeing you on Monday at the ballpark.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for the time, Marty.
All right, thank you. Boy, a great report from Andy Baggerly on the injury, the financial impact, how it's going to affect the pitching staff, and just the overall picture. And what Andy said is really important. They don't hit a lot of home runs. They've only got 12 home runs, and they're last in the National League with that. Pittsburgh got two yesterday, so they went one ahead of the Giants. And if you're going to be that kind of team, you better get some people on ahead. And I would have Nunez in panic in that leadoff spot. I'd drop Span down and have Belt hit second, let him get on base, let him do his thing, and then try to get the run started with 3, 4, and 5. That's what I would do.